Kickoff live right here on Giants.com, joined by Lance Meadow. I am John Schmelk, and we'll be joined by you at 201-939-4513 throughout the course of the show, taking your calls on the New York Football Giants, the NFL draft, and anything else going on in the National Football League. A guest coming your way today at 12:05. Art Stapleton will be joining us to break down the Giants, of course, a great Giants beat reporter, talk about the draft, all that other good stuff. And Lance, we'll start today first by plugging what's coming up this week. I do at the end of the show, but considering we have some shows at different times, I figure we'll get it out there on Twitter, we'll get it out there on social media, what's going on later in the week. So, on Thursday night, we are going to have our Giants Draft Night Live show, which is on MSG. Thursday night, it'll be streamed on Giants.com as well. Now, more importantly, two big and new and unique Big Blue Kickoff live shows will be coming your way this weekend as well. It'll be me and Paul Dottino Friday night at 7 p.m. Make sure you tune in to Giants.com. It's not going to be what we've done in the past, folks. It'll be here in this room. We'll take a lot more calls than we do when it's in the television studio. We'll get you the Giants' second and third round pick. So make sure you tune in to that show Friday night. We'll need your help to get through. It'll be a very long night.
Oh,
and then
imagine.
We'll be back with you on Saturday afternoon. Paul and I will have our tanks to zero, but we will need your help at Saturday and noon as we take through the Giants' fourth, fifth, sixth, and I don't think we'll make it to the seventh round picks.
Paul will, just not on the air, because
I'll pass out. So make sure you join us then Friday night, 7 o'clock, Saturday and noon, special edition episodes, draft episodes of Big Blue Kickoff Live. As I mentioned, Art Stapleton will be with us in about 3 minutes to talk about the Giants and what they're going to do in the draft. But Lance, first, some things came out on ESPN this morning. Todd McShay has his ultimate draft guide. These are all insider articles for you folks that don't have it. I'm sure you can try to figure out a way to get it. And then Mel Kiper had his final big board, and he also had his final position rankings, position by position, more than 200 players on these lists. And I was going through them. I thought a few things caught my eye. I'll give them to you. I want to know what you think about it. He has O.J. Howard as his fifth best player in the draft, which I thought was pretty impressive. Christian McCaffrey as his sixth best player in the draft, which I thought was impressive. And I think those are two of the safer players in the draft based on what everybody is saying. He does not have his first offensive lineman on the board until number 19, and that is Forrest Lamp. He does not have his first quarterback on the board until number 20. That is Mitch Trubisky. He does not have his first offensive tackle on the board, and I'm still going, until 29, and he has Cam Robinson at 29. He has Ryan Ramczyk right after him at 30, and then he has Garrett Bowles down at 43 on his big board.
He doesn't even have Bowles then technically in the first round.
No, he does not have Njoku until number 28, and he has Evan Engram, believe it or not, ahead of Njoku at 22. So I thought those are some interesting things that Mel had in his mock draft. His big board.
Well, the offensive line is not that surprising. We've been talking about this for weeks,
yes,
about this class not being as deep and as well balanced as previous years. In terms of the tight ends, that's where the depth is. Engram, remember, some people project him as that taller wide receiver as opposed to a tight end at the NFL level. So there's intrigue depending on how you utilize him if you were to bring somebody like that in. So that, I think, is somewhat of a question mark connected to him. But obviously the athleticism is appealing, and as well as the height. And then as far as the versatility that McCaffrey brings to the table, you know, Todd McShay's very high on him too. He actually has him as the number one guy under his column for best fit for today's NFL,
yeah,
because of all the things that he could do. And, you know, Jabril Peppers is another guy that comes to mind when you think about versatility. I feel as if there's a lot of people, John, that are on two sides of the fence. Some say versatile players are great because if you're a team, you could find somewhere to put them.
He had Peppers at 26, by the way, just
26.
FYI.
Okay, yes. So that's still a first rounder.
Yes.
And remember, the news came out yesterday that he tested with a diluted sample, so we'll see how that pans out. Reuben Foster out of Alabama is dealing with the same storyline. But
he had Foster at number 8, it looks like, by the way, Mel Kiper.
Now, Foster, the news came out a few weeks ago, whereas
yes,
Peppers, that came out the other day, so a little bit closer to the draft.
And this is what Kiper says, by the way, then you can finish, Lance. Sorry for interrupting. He could drop well below here on draft day, but since these are my rankings, I'm still leaving him in the top 10. Obviously, all the incidents he had at the combine with the hospital and then the diluted sample and his shoulder injuries in school. So a lot of things with him that could drop him down.
Well, and every team's going to have to look into whether or not they buy the story. It's important to note, though, with Peppers has a track record of cramping. So I really don't think that this is necessarily surprising based on what his story was, the fact that he was cramping.
He overhydrated.
That he overhydrated. But you got to go back to even his high school days. There's a track record, is my point, of cramping.
Right.
So NFL teams, I'm sure, are going to see that, and they're going to say, well, maybe this adds up to what's happened during the course of his football career. Foster, I think it's maybe a little bit of a different story.
All right. If you're watching on Twitter, folks, thanks for joining us. Go to Giants.com. You can watch the rest of the show there or check it out on your Giants mobile app. But right now we'll be joined by Art Stapleton, one of our good friends, the Giants beat writer. We're going to start seeing a lot more of Art over the next month or two as the players are back in the building. We'll have our first media availabilities at the OTAs in a couple of weeks. But Art, a lot of stuff to do before then, and the draft's finally here. I know we're all tired of talking about it. We can finally see what the Giants are going to do, and you can stop answering questions on Twitter that you don't have any answers to.
Tired of it? Come on, guys. I got another month or two with me for all the pre-draft stuff. Now it'll be nice to kind of put a bow on this pre-draft evaluation and speculation stuff and get going and moving forward into the next phase. So I appreciate you guys having me on.
Yeah, Art, no problem. And I saw you tweet about a couple things this morning, and I'll start first with a non-draft point, and that's you reporting that there might be some interest at some point between the Giants and LeGarrette Blount.
Yeah, that's something that I've heard the last couple months, that they were keeping an eye on LeGarrette Blount. I think all signs were, and it initially came from Ian Rappaport on NFL Network this morning that kind of put it out there definitively, so I'll give credit there. But, you know, look, what I had heard is, as far as the veteran market for running backs for the Giants, is that there wasn't that initial interest, that they would keep tabs on guys and see where guys fell. And then when it came around draft time, if the price had dropped far enough, that they would maybe engage in a guy like Blount. And I think the feeling all along, and certainly I had it, guys, and I think the Giants had it as well, is that eventually LeGarrette Blount will end up back in New England. And I don't think anyone saw the restricted free agent offer sheet for Mike Gillisley for the Bills. And obviously they brought him aboard yesterday, New England did, when the Bills declined to match. You know, New England has a stable of backs there that I think the door has kind of been closed on LeGarrette Blount. So from a Giants perspective, I think if the price is right, I mean, you look at Adrian Peterson getting, you know, I guess it was $3.5 million a year for New Orleans, that, you know, maybe Blount is that guy, that short yardage guy. I mean, he had 18 touchdowns last year, and he's 2 years younger than Adrian Peterson. So a lot more tread left on the tire with Blount. He is very close with Odell Beckham Jr. They're represented by the same agent, so there is that connection with the Giants. And I think it's something that the Giants will monitor. I don't know necessarily if something's imminent before the draft. I think, you know, you can make the argument that it would benefit the team to get something before the draft, so then you don't have to think about, you know, drafting a running back. But also, I think from the player's perspective, you know, if the Giants go into the draft on Sunday, on Thursday, Friday, or Saturday, and find a running back, you know, that may be one of those things where they draft a running back and then say, look, LeGarrette, you know, we were interested then, but we're not interested now. So certainly something to consider. Pre-draft fodder, if you will, for the Giants.
Well, Art, it's interesting because you mentioned that Blount was so effective in finding the end zone, and sometimes that's tough to do on a New England team where they have so many backs, as you mentioned, but everybody has a carved-out role. And if you go back 2 years ago, when Craig Johnson, the Giants running backs coach, addressed the media, one of the things he pointed out was that, you know, they want to get to the point where it's not three or four different running backs that they utilized 2 years ago, and it's more of in line where you have maybe one or two guys so that you can get players in motion and getting them in rhythm. So with that being
right.
said, if Blount was brought into the Giants, how much do you need to consider what that would do to a Paul Perkins, a Shane Vereen, and some of the other running backs that have at least established themselves as well as their roles on this team?
You know what, Lance? I'm not 100% sure. You know, I think they like what Perkins brings. I think we all like what Perkins brings, what we've seen as a rookie. And now he comes into year two. I'm not sold that Paul Perkins all of a sudden is going to be an 18 to 22 touch guy in a game. So I do think you need that power element Are the Giants a power running game? Well, for the last couple of years, you'd say no way, they're not. And they don't have the makings around it. So bringing in a power back, is that enough to kind of remake this offense? I think there's still three different roles. I mean, if you look at the way Mike McCarthy's offense in Green Bay has been the last couple of years, I mean, and I know it's sometimes simplistic to look at what they do in Green Bay and say, well, that's what Ben McAdoo is going to do with the Giants. But, you know, there's never really been that one guy that they carry. I mean, you go back to all the way, maybe Ryan Grant, you know, in Green Bay is that guy. But I think there are different roles. I mean, look, it's a new NFL. It's the idea of you may not necessarily have that one back. But the Giants' personnel was so predictable last year that I think what they're looking for is just different pieces and different components to be able to diversify, and they didn't have that last year. So I think there's a role for a LeGarrette Blount to come in here as a one-year deal, you know, a Perkins Blount with Shane Vereen in past situations. I mean, look, I like Orleans Darkwa, and I know, you know, a lot of fans, you know, it's the Darkwa fan club. I'm still not convinced that the Giants see Darkwa more than just a special teams guy who can be a very good contributor, and if you get to that point, you put him in the mix. So I think a three-headed guy, you know, backfield would work. It's just a matter of, you know, look, I have my questions with Blount. I mean, he's won two Super Bowl rings the last three seasons. He's looking for a big payday. He didn't get that big payday. Are you getting a motivated LeGarrette Blount to come here and compete for the Giants? If you feel as though he will, then I think he's a fit. If you feel as though he's just coming to kind of, you know, carry the load and be in New York, I'm not necessarily sure that makes it fit. So I hear what you're saying, Lance, in terms of, you know, too many cooks in that backfield, yeah, might kind of take away from that that momentum that the Giants have been searching for. But look, they haven't found it yet. And if you want to look at production, as much as I love watching Rashad Jennings on Monday night on Dancing with the Stars, LeGarrette Blount would be an upgrade to Rashad Jennings, especially in short yardage situations.
You know, the only disappointing thing is that they actually had Paul Dottino to go on that show, but Jennings stepped into the last second and took his spot.
Well, I'm not sure. I know Dottino does a lot of dancing this time of year, but I'm not really sure if it's done on the ballroom floor or in the draft room. But I'll take that. I'll just take that shot and I'll shut up now.
It would interrupt.
I won't continue on the dot, man.
Well, Art, it would interrupt his film study preparation. Yeah. It's a conflict of interest right there. So I just don't think the schedule would.
You know, you can actually watch film and dance at the same time. But anyway, Art, let's let's get to the draft. I'll start with a general question first. When the Giants get to their first round pick, and I think it's a logical place to start at number 23, and they're taking a look at their players, how much are they going to take into consideration, you know, this is a guy that we do have a spot where we can slide him in and get a lot of use out of him, maybe even a starting role right away? Or will they be willing to say, pick a corner or pick a defensive end if that's the best player available with the most talent when they come at 23? How do you think they're going to kind of parse those priorities?
That's the question that everyone wants to know, right? I mean, if you're going by track record and you're going by what Jerry Reese and Mark Ross and this front office has done, they'll tell you it's the best player available, and that's who they're going to take at the top of their board. So I believe they'll have a conviction as to guys who they believe have the most value at 23. So I think what they've done is they've put themselves in position where they're not pigeonholed into taking one spot. I know the fan base doesn't want to hear that regarding the offensive line, and they feel, you know, there are a lot of people who feel, you know, if it's not an offensive line here, then the Giants are making the wrong pick. I don't agree with that. I think you assess the value at 23. You look at the guys that can help this team. I mean, look, guys, you talk corners. You know, DRC's coming off the best season he's ever had for the Giants. It was a great year. I think he's going to be an integral part of this team for this season. We don't know where DRC is this time next year.
Yeah, that's
so if
true.
You're telling me that one of these top-flight corners, a guy you really like, like is sitting there at 23, and you don't have an offensive lineman that you like. You don't have a pass rusher that you like. One of the running back, you know, McCaffrey's not there. Njoku and O.J. Howard are not there. And you're telling me that there's a corner there. Well, you know what? If it's a guy like Adoree Jackson from USC, and he can be a dual threat, he can be a return specialist, a guy on specials that you can fly on this year, and then all of a sudden, you know, DRC gets hurt like he did against Green Bay, and now you throw another rookie in there. I will not rule out any position for the Giants this year at 23, and that includes quarterback, just based on I think they've rebuilt their roster to the point where now it's about looking at this team the way it is, but also keeping 2018, 2019, 2020 in line. I mean, if you look at the roster and linebackers under contract, the only linebacker under contract next year, from what I gather, from what I remember from looking at it, is B.J. Goodson. So you're talking about you have one linebacker on the roster. That's why I went with Jarrad Davis from Florida as a linebacker for them at 23, because as far as what they have next year, we've already seen what free agency can do and guys can leave, and some of the guys are veterans. You know, Keenan Robinson's only on a one-year contract. So I think it's wide open, Schmelk, and I really think that the Giants are in a good spot here to get a player that not only can contribute this year but also help them down the road.
Well, and Art, the other part of the rationale behind maybe where the Giants are going to go is how much does free agency impact the draft plans? And, you know, you pointed to the cornerback spot, and, you know, let's go back to last year. The Giants brought in Janoris Jenkins, so then maybe everybody's saying, well, on paper they made a big splash at the cornerback position. There's no reason to go after that position. And what happens? They wind up drafting Eli Apple. So with that being said, based on what you've seen them do in free agency, how much do you think that enters the equation and the thinking in terms of where they'll go in the first round?
Yeah, I mean, it's also financial. You know, if you take a quarterback, if you like a quarterback, let's just go quarter, not corner. But a quarterback in the first round, guys, you get that fifth-year option. You know, if you're talking about a developmental quarterback, you know, let's say the Giants like Pat Mahomes and they don't believe he's going to play until 2020. Well, the reality is if they take him in the second round, his contract's up in 4 years.
Yeah.
But if they take him in the first round, you get that fifth-year option. You know, that's why I think you're going to see a lot of teams looking to trade back into the back end of the first round if they like one of those developmental quarterbacks at Davis Webb. You know, I just posted my first-round mock for the entire league today, and I have Kansas City taking Davis Webb because I think he's more of a second-round pick, but that fifth-year option, that's huge when it comes to a quarterback hitting the free agent market. I think the same with corners. You know, you look at pass rushers. Look at the contracts that the Giants have on their defensive line. Three of the four guys that had to sew up the way they did with big money contracts, and only one of them they drafted. So if you're going to have that money tied up, you need to get hits at other spots to be able to avoid paying that money on the market. So I think that all plays into it. You have to look at who's going to come free next year, what spots you think you're going to be able to handle, and then, of course, the offensive line. I'm sure we're going to get into it, but there's a reason why the offensive linemen on the market this year got the kind of money that they got. You look at what's in the draft, and they're not ready to play guys in the draft. It's not to say that a Garrett Bowles or a Cam Robinson or a Ryan Ramczyk or even a Forrest Lamp will be able to play and become good players, but it's a matter of if you needed a guy immediately, then you went out and you spent a ton of money on guys that really were marginal free agents. I mean, let's be honest. Guys that were getting money on the market this year on the offensive line were really the top-end guys really on other years would be middle-of-the-road prospects. A lot of question marks, a lot of injury question marks. So to answer a long-winded answer to your question and your point, Lance, is I think the market certainly affects what they do in the draft because you have to look at what's coming down the road. Look, it factored with the Eagles last year with their big trade for Carson Wentz. They didn't like the quarterback market this year. They went after it last year because they liked the guy in Wentz.
Yeah, no question about it. Art Stapleton from The Record joining us on Big Blue Kickoff Live. John Schmuck, Lance Meadow. And Art, again, let's go a little bit into the deeper to the offensive lineman. You mentioned it. People not high in this class. We've been talking to, you know, people that do this draft stuff for the past, you know, few months, really. And everyone has basically said that, look, maybe one lineman's off the board when the Giants picks, at most two. What's your feel, or do you have any feel, for what the Giants front office and brain trust feels about this offensive line class? Are they in line with what most people think, or do you think they might surprise people and pick one of those guys in the first round?
You know, the sense I get is that I don't want to say it's a divide, because I think saying it's a divide is kind of a negative connotation. But the sense I've gotten is that there are differing opinions in the front office, and sometimes that's what you want.
Sure.
You know, you want that between ownership and the coaching staff. You know, you want people to kind of throw things all out there. I think they've recognized that it is a risk to go into this season expecting the tackles to improve just based on a year later, a year older, more, you know, harder work, you know, harder working in the off season, the coaching them up again. It's year two in the coaching staff with Solari and getting them going. But I also think they weigh that against what you have. It's what you have, and it's replacement value. You know, is Eric Flowers at 22 years old with 2 years of NFL experience under his belt a better option for this Giants team than any of the potential tackles that are available in the draft?
Yeah, Art, I want to step in real quick, just remind fans that Flowers is younger than both Ryan Ramczyk and Garrett Bowles.
Right. Yeah. It's what you have, and the grass is not always greener. I'd be lying to you guys if I sat here and said, and I think anyone who believes that they know exactly what the Giants are going to do at 23, they're fibbing a little bit, because the last couple of years we've been able to pinpoint, you know, two or three guys that they really liked. I mean, everyone wants to point at last year and say, look, we knew the Giants liked Leonard Floyd. We knew the Giants liked Jack Conklin. Nobody saw Eli Apple. That's because the two guys the Giants liked were, you know, picked right before them. Guys leapfrogged them or what have you. When you're picking at 9 and 10, and even to an extent 12, like Odell Beckham Jr.,
yeah,
it's a little bit easier to make a list of 12 or 13 guys that a team likes and say, you know what, they're going to get one of these guys. When you're at 23, so much can happen here that a guy that you don't even, you know, look at the Justin Pugh year. I mean, the only guy that I heard that mentioned Justin Pugh was the day before the draft at Chelsea Piers, and Mike Mayock brought up Justin Pugh and said, watch for Justin Pugh with the Giants.
Yeah, and Art, I want to go on top of that. When they drafted Prince, I don't even think they had him in for a pre-draft visit, because they didn't think he was going to be available right when they picked in the first round.
Exactly, and that was the next guy I was going to say, the idea that, you know, when Prince came here, you know, even when I talked to Eli Apple last week, when he kind of, I don't know if you guys saw the video, but he kind of crashed our video outside the headquarters. Tara Sullivan and I had a draft video, and Eli Apple kind of broke in, and we talked to him a little briefly about the draft, and it was the idea of he didn't see the Giants calling him. And it wasn't because he didn't think the Giants were interested. It's just that they just were not on his radar. The uncertainty involving this year's draft compared to the last couple of years, I mean, I haven't seen one since I took over the beat late in 2011 and the start of 2012. And you know what? Winning has a lot to do with that.
Yeah.
The Giants hadn't been back in the playoffs,
yeah,
so there's a reason why it's so unpredictable, because they're picking later than they have since they won the Super Bowl in 2011. So, you know, I just think back to what Jerry Reese said back that season, and it may have been a little bit of a general manager speak, but you know what? The later you pick in the first round, you'll take it every year, because it means you had a good year. You want to build your roster. You want to be in the top 10. But you know what? You want to pick in the 20s, because that means you did something right on the field. And now you have to parlay that into picks that are later and later and later. You know, and that's the argument that comes up regarding next year. You know, well, it's a, you know, I've heard this, and I'm sure you guys have too. What about the quarterback? Why not wait until next season to take a developmental quarterback? Because next year the Giants believe that they're going to pick further down the line than 23. Heck, they hope they're picking 32nd next year.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of the way they want. So, you know, you're not going to be in position to draft a guy. So there aren't many times where you can get into a situation and say, look, we're in the spot. We got to make this splash now. And I think the Giants have all doors open at this point.
And by the way, predicting the quarterback class is impossible. This time last year, Brad Kaya was in line for a first overall pick in the draft. He's going to be a fourth or fifth rounder. Lance, go ahead.
Well, I actually was going to bring up Brad Kaya because Art has him in the mock draft.
Oh, does he really?
Yes.
How about that?
Well, we'll get to that in a second, Art. Yeah, but what I also wanted to bring up, it's interesting because you mentioned, you know, the Giants hope that they're picking 32nd overall, and you were talking about when they had interest in guys and other teams moving in front. I remember the last time they picked 32nd, they took David Wilson, and if you remember, there was chatter about Doug Martin perhaps could be tied to the Giants, and what happens, Tampa Bay takes him right before the Giants are ready to select. So my point is whether you're selecting at 12 versus 32, you never know how the dominoes are going to play out. But getting back to the quarterback class, if you look beyond your mock draft out of the first round, you have an offensive lineman perhaps going to the Giants in the second round, and then you have Brad Kaya in the discussion at round 4. You know, how do you see the depth at some of these other positions, specifically the offensive line and quarterback, which are not really strong points in this year's class compared to tight end as well as the defensive line?
Yeah, you know, I like the developmental guy, the quarterback late in day two or beginning of day three for the Giants. I like a guy like Kaya. I know people bring up Nathan Peterman from Pittsburgh. You know, coming out of the combine, I had a list of 6 quarterbacks that I knew the Giants liked. I mean, the usual suspects were the top 4. And that with Kaiser, Mahomes, Trubisky, and Watson, and then Kaya and Jerod Evans. Those are guys that they were interested at the combine. They were on their list. All the other guys, the Petermans, the Davis Webbs, guys who have been brought up, Dobbs from Tennessee. Those guys, from what I understood, that the Giants were not necessarily in on those guys. So I zeroed in on Kaya as my guy that I was going to draft. I talked to Kaya. I have something coming out on Thursday hitting NorthJersey.com tomorrow about Kaya. He worked with Ben McAdoo and Mike Sullivan at the combine in their meeting, did a little, diagramming and scheming, got a good feel for it. He was actually working out, ironically enough, with Odell Beckham Jr. Over the weekend, throwing out in California. So I like Kaya there. But as far as the depth goes, Lance, I think if the Giants are taking an offensive lineman in the draft, you need to have that idea that they could play tackle eventually. I mean, that's the way I looked at it.
I agree.
That's why I took Deion Dawkins in the second round, because I think that even though he may not be ready to take that left tackle job tomorrow, I think maybe he works into the mix at right tackle and becomes an option. And then if you like him enough and Flowers does not improve, then maybe you have another option to swing over to left tackle down the road. I don't know necessarily if taking interior guys are the way to go with the depth in this draft, because I don't want another guy. I don't need to add just another guy for 2017. I mean, I'm of the belief that they believe Justin Pugh and Weston Richburg are going to be the left guard and the center of this team going forward, and it's beyond 2017. I expect long-term deals for both of those guys. So I'm not looking for a left guard or a center. I know there are some people saying, well, you need to protect yourself just in case Justin Pugh hits the market. I believe they're going to sign Justin Pugh. I think it's only a matter of time and how the market shakes out. But I'm not worried about that. So to answer your question, Lance, I don't like the depth going beyond, you know, day two in the offensive line room. Yeah. I really don't. I mean, I think the way they've set it up, they're looking – you need to get a tackle in here to compete. And if not, you know what? I think you maybe wait. You maybe wait another year. You know, Julian Davenport is a guy that I liked from Bucknell – I just saw a report Dante Scarnecchia from New England has worked him out several times. Davenport, do you really want to take a guy from an offensive lineman from Bucknell late in the second round? I wouldn't. I just wouldn't get to that point. I think he's more of a day three prospect for me. That's where I had him initially in my Giants mock before I kind of went a little different and went with Dawkins in round two.
You know, Art, you have Jake Butt to the Giants in round three in your mock, that tight end in Michigan. A couple more questions for Art Stapleton from the record. My question for you is a philosophical one for the Giants. Jake Butt is that two-way tight end. He can catch and he can block a little bit. We know under Tom Coughlin, the Giants really couldn't figure out a way how to use a tight end that couldn't block. We all remember the Travis Beckham Jr. thing, which did not work out for anybody involved. Injuries had something to do with that, too. But do you think with Ben McAdoo here, with a little bit of a different offense, they would be more willing to bring in one of these hybrid, either Evan Ingram or Gerald Everett or Bucky Hodges types where, yeah, they're listed as a tight end, but they're really more of a wide receiver, but you can use them in kind of like a slash roll out there on the line, spread outside. Do you think they'd be more open to drafting one of those guys now than maybe they were in the past when Tom Coughlin was the head coach?
You know what? I would say absolutely this offense, the way it's constructed, could fit more of a tight end, that seam busting tight end. I mean, look, all you had to do was watch the Giants last year. I mean, you could point to all the flaws of the offense. The one spot, even more so than a running game, I'd say, is that tight end to bust the seam. I mean, you had plays that were there that, whether it was Will Tye or Jarrell Adams, you know, these guys are nice players, but they couldn't make those plays. I mean, I think of a game in the regular season in Green Bay, a seam, if Eli Manning hits Will Tye up the seam against Green Bay, instead of overthrowing him, and Tye looked kind of awkward, and then there was another time, I think it may have also been in Green Bay with Jarrell Adams.
Yep.
You know, that's a position that the Giants could really use in this offense. That's why I like David Njoku so much for the Giants. But I just don't know if that's going to work out in the first round. But I think Njoku is really more of a two-way guy who can grow into that two-way guy.
Right.
You know, I don't know. I'm not in love with taking some of these, you know, like you said, the hybrid guy who's not going to block at all.
Right.
Like, you know what? I just as soon roll out Will Tye and Jarrell Adams again this year and say, those two guys with Red Ellison, I'd like to upgrade, but if I can't upgrade, I want to see what those two guys can do in my draft. And then, you know, I also have a Matt Lacoste who might show a little bit more of that inline guy behind Ellison and see how those guys shake out in camp. But you know what? I'm the wrong guy to talk about the Hodges or the Evan Ingrams because I'm good. You know what? I look at this offense and I say, you know what? I want Ellison on the field, and I'm going to need Marshall, Shepard, and Beckham on the field. So how do I do that? And where does a tight end like the ones you've mentioned fit in with that group? I want more 12 personnel, but I also know that my best option offensively is to have Marshall, Beckham, and Shepard on the field at the same time. So where does that get me? And I'm going to need a tight end to protect my tackles, so I'm going to need Ellison on the field as well, and that just takes me out of 12 personnel.
Yeah, I think you bring up a great point, Art. Ellison's presence on the field perhaps enables you to utilize some of the current tight ends. If that strong point is for them to receive the ball and Ellison's strength is to block, if you were to bring in a hybrid, you're not necessarily moving forward in the right direction in terms of improving the overall roster. But on the topic of Ellison, Art, and I'm sure you got plenty of these questions in the offseason as we did, if you had a nickel for every time somebody asked you about the fullback philosophy and how that adds into the equation here for the Giants. And probably the most interesting thing that Jerry Reese said in his end of the season press conference was, you know, part of the reason why they didn't bring in a fullback was because the fullback wasn't called upon to be involved greatly in the offense. Now, whether or not that changes philosophically this season remains to be seen. But how much, if Ellison is used as a fullback, Art, how much does that perhaps change the philosophy of what you do at tight end this season?
It's a good question. I don't know if I don't see Ben McAdoo in this offense lining up in old school power football.
I agree.
With Brandon Jacobs and Henry Heinoski in the backfield, and all of a sudden you're pounding out for that third and one, needing to do it. I just don't see him doing it. And part of the reason, and you can call it stubbornness if you want, I truly believe that the Giants went 11 personnel last year with the three wide receivers because they thought, you know what, this is our strength, and we're going to be better than what anyone else can do against us. And they were proven wrong because they couldn't run out of that set, and they couldn't make consistent enough plays to be able to take the top off of the cover two defense. But you look at this season, what's the best offense? What's the best personnel? If the Giants are putting their best personnel on the field, their best personnel is probably going to be 11 personnel again.
Absolutely.
It's probably going to be the three wide receiver set with Beckham, Shepard, and Marshall. And if it's not, well, then something's wrong because now you're taking one of those guys off the field.
Yep.
So who you're telling me you're taking Sterling Shepard off the field because you want to put a tight end in, a hybrid tight end, and you want to put him in the slot rather than having Sterling Shepard in the slot? Well, then you know what? Then we're misreading the entire offense for this Giants team because I legitimately believe that what they're doing is they're taking Victor Cruz, who was probably better suited to the slot last year. He made more plays downfield than people want to give him credit for, but then you bring in a Brandon Marshall. Brandon Marshall should be better on the outside than Victor Cruz is. It's just, I mean, he's a more accomplished receiver across his career on the outside. Where are you going to go? Who are you going to take off the field? You're going to sit Sterling Shepard? Well, then this Giants offense is going to take on a completely different look than what we've seen in the past. So that's kind of how I'm looking at this team. I just think that if I'm going to go with a tight end, I'm either going to take one of the studs, the O.J. Howard, or to a lesser extent, a David Njoku. And after that, maybe a project. I can take Jake Butt, and I don't need Jake Butt to right away be a complete tight end for me. I can bring him along slowly, and I can see, you know, maybe he starts on PUP, and middle of this year, all of a sudden Jake Butt comes off of PUP, and now I have a guy who could kind of be that, you know, Rhett Ellison guy if Ellison's hurt. You know, that's the other thing, guys. I mean, last year, Will Johnson was supposed to be Rhett Ellison to an extent.
Yeah. Sure.
And he got hurt, and they had no one else to replace him, and that role went by the wayside. This year, Rhett Ellison is in that role, but if Rhett Ellison rolls an ankle or rolls a knee and gets hurt in training camp, where do they go? I mean, I think maybe they go back to Will Johnson, who's still a free agent.
Yeah.
But ultimately, that position is kind of that pigeonhole where I think the Giants know what they like. I think it's a good plan, but if it falls apart, they need to have options around it. And I don't know necessarily if a hybrid tight end is necessarily that guy.
Final question for Art Stapleton. Art, you have Jarrad Davis in your mock draft, so I imagine that's going to be your prediction. You have Njoku off the board. If Njoku was there, would you have gone with him? And when all is said and done, how come you went with Davis? And are you concerned at all about his injury issues in college?
I would. If Njoku was there at 23, I would pick him. I don't know necessarily if the Giants will.
Okay.
And the reason I like Davis is just I think at linebacker, I think you want to have a guy who can go forward and you want to have a guy who can go backward.
Yeah.
And I think Davis is that guy who can be a pass rusher, but he can also cover. Any of these injury histories, I have concerns. I mean, look, if the guy gets hurt, you know, you feel like a fool because you say, I should have seen this coming. But I'm willing to look past that, especially the high ankle sprain that he played through last year.
Mm-hmm.
From what I gather, it was one of those, you know, take one for the team, play through the injury rather than shutting himself down.
Yep.
And at this point, you know, if you get a guy who hasn't suffered an ACL, and I'm not saying he was, but I think of, you know, Jake Butt. I mean, if a guy hasn't had one ACL, you consider yourself, you thank your lucky stars that he hasn't had one. Because the way they pop up all over the place, at this point, they give out ACL surgeries for candy. So that's why I went Davis. I think they can go any number of of linebacker spots, but I think they're looking for that linebacker, not just a cover guy, but a guy who can kind of fit into that pass rush package, and that's why I went Davis.
Thank you, Art. Appreciate the time, my friend. We'll see you on Thursday at the facility.
Thanks so much, Art.
Fellas, appreciate it. Thanks.
Art Stapleton from the record. He goes Jared Davis, another new name in our list of many, but the second linebacker we've had in our list of predictions, much to Lance Meadows' chagrin, who wants to keep throwing out that Carl Banks statistic.
I do. I was going to actually squeeze that in to see what Art's reaction would be if he can't write that, too, in terms of his articles.
That was his caption. It the did. First linebacker since Carl Banks.
It's brought up quite often. It would be quite a end of a drought if that is the case. But
all right.
Davis is certainly a versatile player.
Art went a little long, so let's get right to the calls at 201-939-4513. Andrew's in New Jersey. He's been holding the longest. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, thanks. At least they ended on a great one. You know, it's hard to match Carl Banks, so if you do get drafted in the first round, you have a big shoes to fill.
Yep.
And I still say pass rusher is my number one need, even though they have two of them. If you look at the Super Bowl, when they couldn't get Brady had the historical comeback this year, they couldn't get pressure on him.
Except Grady
Jarrett. You have guys like Cam Newton, maybe Dak in Dallas, the guy in Seattle, Russell Wilson, and even Les Mobile, the guy in Atlanta.
Matt Ryan.
He made that great pass to Julio Jones.
And Andrew, not to mention the two guys in the division, Carson Wentz and Dak Prescott.
Oh, and Wentz, too. He's new, and he's athletic and real elusive. I was impressed. And conversely, if you're going against the Giants, like with Beckham, if you could pressure Eli, that takes away the deep ball to Beckham, and then they can only do the quick dink and dunk.
Yep.
So also for depth, I want the pass rusher. And if the great tight, you know, the two-way tight end, Martellus Bennett, who was on the Giants, and Kiwanuka were both on the board this year, which one would you pick? And players now, do you think they'll be a top quality defensive tackle that's worth the pick, that's not a reach? Do you have a prediction who that'll be? And if those two players from the past were on the board, which one would you take? And I'll hang up and listen. Thanks.
Why don't you take that first, Lance?
Martellus Bennett versus Matthias Kiwanuka, meaning if those two players were in this year's draft class, who would I have gone with based on what the roster looks like right now?
I'd probably pick Bennett, I think.
You know, I mean, I always feel as if you can never have enough pass rushers on
the
roster.
Yeah, but Kiwanuka was never that
great
of a pass rusher.
He wasn't. I'll give you that. But
now,
he was the guy that you can move off the line and to the line.
And I would have liked to ask Andrew this follow-up question. Do I get Kiwanuka's guaranteed career? Because I think if you use him differently from year one and don't move him around, maybe he would have been a better pass rusher. You know what I mean?
In terms of later on in his career.
Can I take Kiwanuka and just play him at defensive end the whole time, or do I have to use him at linebacker too like the Giants did when he was here? So I think that would be my follow-up question. Remember, it took Martellus Bennett a while to kind of get going too. He had trouble getting out from behind Jason Witten's shadow.
Correct. Yeah, I mean, he was a young, basically an unknown commodity behind Jason Witten, and then he wanted to branch out, and the way the Giants utilized, he thrived. And I think that people would point to, oh, you got to go to Martellus Bennett because you want that receiving tight end. But, you know, as Art and us just went back and forth, based on Rhett Ellison and the combination of what they already have, I think they could get by. So, I mean, my answer would be Kiwanuka, regardless of whether we're going what his career path was or versus how you could utilize him in a different reality.
See, I disagree. See, I think Bennett's a two-way tight end. He can catch, he can block, he can do both things. I don't think there's one thing that Matthias Kiwanuka did really well.
Well, but once again, I think that you're looking at it also from Spags's philosophy and how he likes to rotate individuals and different downs. And, you know, I'm not necessarily expecting Kiwanuka to be in and be in for every single down.
Well,
I'm talking about how he would fit maybe into Spags's scheme.
Well, I'm looking at it this way. I think at no point was Matthias Kiwanuka ever as good of a player at what he did than Martellus Bennett was at what he did.
I don't disagree with you. And I think also you got to take into consideration Kiwanuka and his injury history, too.
Well, of course, that certainly impacted
his production. I mean, the neck injury alone is one that comes out. Bennett, a little bit more durable, even though he did have some issues with the knee. So you can't overlook that, too. I think they're both good choices under this hypothetical, but I basically would always lean towards a defensive personnel. And I would still go into this year's draft even thinking about where I would place the Giants in, and I would go with a defensive player as well. I think that this is a defense which is the identity of the team. As much as people want to talk about Eli's window, The identity of the Giants is defense.
But they didn't win last year because of the offense.
Well, you're right, but they're only in that position that they are last year because of the way the defense performed.
But don't you have to help the offense, though?
You do. You need to help the offense, but I also think that it could be tweaks and schemes and philosophies as opposed to necessarily personnel.
I suppose. I mean, talent's a big part of it, though, too.
Talent is a big part, but if you're going to tell me that with Marshall, with the talent that they have right now on offense, that they're incapable of scoring the amount of points that everybody expects them to do.
Well, I mean, they basically switched out one significant player.
They did it in terms of Marshall Villacruz.
Yeah.
But I think what Marshall provides in terms of his play more consistently on the outside, whereas Cruz was more of that, you know, he's more of a slot guy. You play him on the outside to mix things up. You have Shepard. I think there's more identifiable roles with this receiving core right now as it stands heading into this season.
Let's go to Nick in Charlotte. He joins us next on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Hey, Nick.
How we doing, guys?
Doing great. What's up?
All right, so first round pick. Do we want tight ends, defensive end, or linebacker?
I think it depends who the best player is that's on the board. I don't think I'm going to tell you what position until you tell me who I'm picking between.
Yeah, who's still left?
All right. Let's say Barnett's there. Let's say Harris is there. And McKinley's there for defensive end. Let's say Njoku's there. Let's say Davis and Cunningham.
Those are all good choices.
I would push linebackers aside. I love Njoku, but if Derek Barnett's on the board, I would have a hard time passing on him at that point. I think I would probably take Njoku over McKinley because he's coming off the shoulder surgery, and you worry when he's going to be ready. And Harris, you worry about him playing the run. So I would rank that list 1 Barnett, 2 Njoku, and then McKinley and Harris would be after those two guys. Yeah, That's how I would do it.
No, I would agree with your philosophy there. I mean, Njoku I would throw in the mix, but I personally, I like Barnett, I like Harris. I think if either one of those wind up at the Giants, I think that's great value. Barnett more so than Harris, and I'd be stunned, by the way, if Barnett is still around, because here's the thing about Barnett.
Yeah. Production.
Barnett did very well against elite teams in the SEC. That's the difference. If you want to criticize some of these other defensive linemen, the thing about Barnett is you go and you look at the match. Matchups, he thrived against the top-tier caliber offensive lines in the SEC.
30 sacks in 3 years.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't want to hear, oh, well, you know, I'm worried about how it's going to translate. It's there. There are other guys that you could point out that did not get the majority of their sacks against elite guys, and that may be your question. Not with the case with Barnett.
All righty. So, with that said, we don't think those guys are going to be there. Does that mean Njoku is your number one?
I'm not sure if Njoku's going to be there either. I mean, I think there's a chance that Harris is gone. I think there's a chance that Barnett's gone. And I think there's a chance that Njoku's gone. All three of them could be gone, you know, to be honest with you. And frankly, I don't know where McKinley's going to land either. Some people really like him as a pass rusher. And, you know, that gets back to Art's point, Nick. It's really just hard to predict who's going to be there when the Giants go with 23. I will say this, of the 6 guys that you mentioned, I'm nearly positive at least 1 will be there, and I think probably 2 will be there. Of the 6 guys that you mentioned.
Yeah, I would agree with John, and I would say probably of the guys, Harris, I think, has a very good chance to be there at 23 when the Giants...
And Cunningham, I think, will be
and
there
Cunningham
at 23.
Cunningham certainly in that ballpark as well.
Thank you for the call, Nick. Appreciate it.
Well.
All right, thank you. Let's go to Len in Columbia, Maryland. Len, how are you, buddy?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Doing great. What's up?
You know, there was a four-minute period there when Stapleton was talking... Ought to be required listening for everybody who tunes in to Big Blue Kickoff Live.
Which
Blue
part
Kickoff
of it?
Live.
Which part of parts?
He was pretty good.
Yeah.
He was pretty good. That whole idea of not wanting to take a wide receiver off the field. You know, you want your best players on the field. I thought that was pretty enlightening, almost like a slap upside the head. Pretty good. Pretty good.
Now, Len, I won't make this argument, though. You can leave those 3 wide receivers on the field and then put that 4th hybrid tight end on the field in 3rd and long situations, too. So that's like a guaranteed, you know, 10 to 15 plays a game where you could use all 3 wide receivers plus that hybrid tight end in what would be a pretty impressive and dangerous receiving package.
Yeah. Okay. Second point before I tell you who the first round pick's going to be.
Yes, sir.
You know, Lance, and this is kind of a friendly statement. Don't take this the wrong way. You guys are starting to frustrate me.
How so?
Are you going to pick somebody?
Len, we have to.
Are you going to go out on a limb? I mean, you're asking all the experts who call in. Are you guys going to go out on a limb and give us a name?
Len.
Even if you box it, even if it's 3 or 4 guys. who's going to be there and who would you go with?
Len, tune in Thursday. That's
it's Tuesday,
our,
Len.
Thursday is our mock draft, and yeah. We will go through.
Okay.
Me, Paul, and Lance will alternate picks, and we will get to the Giants pick, and each of us will either pick a guy or, you know, give us our top two for the Giants at that spot. But look, I think we've been pretty obvious. I mean, I've been very clear that I really like Njoku. I'm not a big fan of the three offensive linemen that are there. I think Cunningham's a very good player. I like Davis, too. I do worry about his injuries. And like we've been talking about a lot, you know, there's a lot of good defensive ends and cornerbacks available, too. I mean, I think we've narrowed it down to a handful of guys that, you know, will probably be in the mix.
If you guys are going to do that on Thursday, somehow I missed that.
Yes, we will.
Let's,
it's okay.
Let's move on, and I'm going to cancel my golf game on Thursday. That's going to be a good listen. I want to listen to you guys make
it'll be picks. All three of us on at the same time, so look out. It could get ugly.
Okay. Hey, listen, here's what I'm thinking. If Njoku is there, you better have three telephones in the room because the phone's going to be ringing off the hook.
You think so?
You're going to have maybe even the next team, maybe even Oakland, is going to call you. Oakland at 24 is going to call you and say, hey, what can we do to get the 23rd pick?
Why Oakland, though, just out of curiosity? Because remember,
well, I'm just saying, I think there's a number of teams that are going to call, even Oakland.
Okay.
Right?
I think most likely at 23, Pittsburgh's going to be salivating if Njoku's there. So give me, let's swap number ones. Give me a 3 and give me a 7, and we make the trade.
Hey, look, Len. I've said it before.
Or we pick Njoku because at that point, if Njoku is still available, he's the best player available.
Len, if he's there, I would have a hard time trading down unless I'm getting an extra second round pick.
Second round pick. Okay.
Well,
okay.
I mean, obviously it depends how far you're going down.
I would think you're going to have an option if Njoku is there. I think you're going to have an option. Somebody's going to be calling you. All right. If Njoku's not there and Robinson is. Jump all over it, man. Jump all over it. If he's gone, a three-down linebacker who hits like Davis does, oh, my gosh. Hopefully Davis is there. If Davis is not there, maybe Charlton. Maybe Charlton.
No, he's a good player.
But
yeah,
Charlton may be gone,
player.
Too.
Yeah, no, Taco's a good too. One, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We like Taco.
If all four of those guys are there, that's why I was thinking about trade, because then you get into guys like Willis and Warmley at 29, maybe even Atlanta at 30.
It's high for Warmley.
So
yeah.
that's at this point, 48 hours before the draft. That's where I'm coming from. That's where I'm coming from, guys.
Sounds good, Len.
Okay. Hey, I'm looking forward to Thursday and you guys making those picks.
Okay, appreciate it, man.
All right, Len.
Thank you, Len.
Hey, John. Hey,
yes.
John. John.
Yes.
Robinson is still going top 15, by the way.
Who is Cam Robinson?
We got a wager, right?
Yes, we do. That's right. It was top 15. Was that the bet? I don't even remember, to be honest with you. Lance, help us out.
Top 15. The only thing I was going to ask, and then I'll get off the phone real quick. Give me top half of the draft. So let's extend that to 16.
Oh, you're asking for a plus one? I will give you your plus one. That's fine. And by the way, you should be very happy because a lot of the recent scuttlebutt that I'm hearing is that he is actually going to move in to a spot before the Giants go. But I still think, you know me, I'm not a big fan of his. I would be surprised by that, and I would be disappointed with that as well.
Len, you know, the week is young. On Thursday when you call up and you ask John to go to 17.
Nope, not happening.
I don't know if we're going to provide that flexibility.
I'll
take
15. I'm a man of my word. I was trying to negotiate a little bit there.
I'll give you a pick.
I'll take
15.
So, Len,
John, I just want to remind you,
yes.
It's a regular Coca-Cola. Don't start with Diet Coke or
none of that nonsense. Thank you, Len.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Let's go to Christian in Long Island. He's up next. Hi, Christian.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Doing well. What's up?
All right. So I kind of had a couple questions, and one is kind of a two-part question.
Sure.
If you have, let's say, the top three offensive linemen and you have the top three linebackers there, even Foster now is probably going to drop because of the test. Would you take the chance on Foster, and would you go linebacker, or would you go offensive line?
I think the best available player there is Foster. The question is all the off-the-field stuff. Me and Lance don't have access to that. We're not doing interviews. We're not looking at his background. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff there that we probably don't know about. If you're just telling me to evaluate them as players, I would take Reuben Foster and not think twice about it. But the other stuff, which I really don't know and nobody knows enough about except for the teams that have done the research, it's really hard for me to put that into the equation to make a informed answer to that part of your question. You know what I mean?
Now, Foster was on ESPN Radio this morning on Mike and Mike, and he pretty much answered just about every question with respect to the testing and did say that he apologized to the individuals when there was that heated argument about when he was initially tested at the combine. So, I mean, he is making the PR rounds and trying to explain himself. It'd be hard to pass on value like that at 23, considering, you know, where he is ranked and how he performed at Alabama. And I think it also helps that he's coming from a program where, you know, Nick Saban usually gives access to NFL teams, and if there's anybody that you at least would take the word of, you take the word of a guy that's been around the NFL block a few times.
And by the way, there's a good chance right now, Christian, that I think he might be there, so the Giants will have to make that decision, and they have all that information on his background, and by the way, his injury history, because there's an injury history with him, too, that you have to take into consideration.
That, to me, is a little bit more concerning than perhaps maybe some of this off-the-field
head
stuff.
Head and shoulder, right?
Yeah. Those are the types of things, the concussions, the necks because of the way he hit and so forth. I mean, those are the things that I would keep closer tabs on than worried about perhaps some of the character issues.
Do you think that he's just a, you know, a run stopper at this point, or he actually could, you know, become a cover linebacker at one point or immediately?
Taking
him at 23, which is first round. So.
Oh, no, he can do both. I mean, honestly, he wouldn't be talked about as a top 10 pick if he couldn't cover and stop the run. So I think you bring him in, he's going to be your Mike linebacker for now in the future, and he is going to be able to do a little bit of everything.
Okay, now, we know Ramczyk has the hip, but he's supposedly the best technician of the draft. Would you even willing to take a chance on somebody like that since he would, you know, once he does get healthy, you can polish him up quicker than you can some of these other guys?
If Ramczyk was healthy, I think he's my top offensive lineman on the board. But, again, the medical stuff is a lot like the character stuff. We don't know exactly where he is with that and exactly how long he'd be out, so it's hard for us to take that sort of stuff into consideration just because of the lack of information.
Well, and the other thing with Ramczyk to keep in mind, the health is a huge question mark because, remember, if you're going to draft an offensive lineman in the first round who's going to compete with Ereck Flowers, he needs to be on the field at the start of the spring.
Yep.
He can't be on the field in the middle of July and August when you get into the heart of training camp if you want to compete and you want to have a competition with your starting left tackle. I just don't think that necessarily, you know, serves you well. If that is the philosophy, if that's not the philosophy and you're okay with bringing in a developmental guy, then perhaps that changes the philosophy moving towards number one. But, you know, health is big for a tackle that you're going to bring in because he needs to be able to be on the field day
especially one that's inexperienced. It only is 1 year of Division I football. You want him on the field in the spring, so you don't know how much that's going to set him back and when he's going to be able to start doing work.
All right, and I have one last question. I'm a big Njoku fan. I'm dying to see him in blue. I feel like he would, you know, take our offense to the next level.
Yeah.
And, you know, he does have the willingness to block. But I'm seeing McDowell creeping out of the first and into the second, and I'm seeing Evan Engram creeping into the first. What are your guys' thoughts on both of those and where they're, you know, respect to falling?
I think your evaluation of the two are correct. I think there's a better chance that Engram goes in the first round than McDowell at this point, in my opinion. I think McDowell's a guy that you think about in round two. To me, he's too inconsistent to think about in round number one. And I think, you know, I see the argument for Engram in the first round. I do. It's just hard for me to get my head around, even in this new age of football, Lance, a one-dimensional linebacker with the 23rd overall pick. Tight end.
Tight end, you mean, yeah.
With the 23rd overall
pick.
Good
luck trying to play him in linebacker.
Yeah, exactly, right. Well, and that's really the problem. You know, there's that physicality's not there, though. Tony Pauline yesterday said he loved the blocking they did at Senior Bowl, even though he didn't really do it much at Ole Miss. So I thought that was an interesting addendum to Engram. So if he could take what he did at the Senior Bowl and bring it to the NFL, then maybe you got something. And that's an evaluation all these NFL teams are going to have to make.
Well, I mean, I think he'll wind up going to a team.
Thanks for the call,
Christian.
Appreciate
it. He could
very
well thrive. Yeah, appreciate the phone call. And they have no plans for him to block. And I could see him being okay. But if you're bringing him into a team where you expect him to be that dual threat tight end, it may take a season or two for him to, you know, accept that physicality.
Here's the question. Jordan Reed doesn't block anybody.
But they have Vernon Davis.
Wouldn't you love
to
have...
So I think that makes it a little bit easier,
Well,
though.
Giants have Red Ellison.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. You either... So let me clarify. You either have supporting personnel that could block at that position so that you're not calling on the rookie to come in year one and do that, or the way you run your offense, your offensive line and your running backs pull their weight in the blocking aspect where you're fine with the tight end just running routes. It has to be either or. Mm-hmm. I mean, the way that I look at it, and a quick side note with respect to the tight end, just going back to Len's point about how if Njoku's there at 23, the Giants should start listening to the phone, and I think that they very well will, but the Raiders and the Steelers would personally not be the first two teams that I would put on the list.
Because, I think the Steelers like Ladarius Green.
Yeah, well, that's first of all, and then Oakland just signed Jared Cook. From
right.
Green Bay.
They
Let's
did.
Not forget about that. So, once again, depth, you can never have enough. But if I'm one of those two teams, and personally, Green Bay's got major issues on defense that they need to address, I could think about taking a corner and then some before I'd even think about a tight end or anything like that.
Three teams, Lance, to me, that I will almost guarantee will select a defensive player in the first round. First, New Orleans Saints. Second, Green Bay Packers.
Yes.
Third, Dallas Cowboys. If any one of those three teams does not pick a defensive player, yeah. I will be shocked. Shocked.
Yeah. Dallas, pass rusher especially.
Or corner.
Or corner, but pass rusher, I mean, they could certainly use a boost on the defensive line.
Agree.
Green Bay, I could point to a variety of different positions. They lost Julius Peppers. They were decimated by injuries in that secondary.
Secondary's a mess.
The corner specifically more so than the safety because they do have Ha-Ha Clinton-Dix. And then you look at – who was your third team you
Saints.
Mentioned? The Saints. Yeah, well, I mean, don't get me started with the Saints. The Saints, it's like on a loop. Every single year you can point to the fact that they could use help on the defense.
And last year they drafted Michael Thomas, but in fairness allowed them to trade Brandon Cooks to bring in
And Michael Thomas
help.
Was a great pick. I mean, he had
a second rounder too, by the way.
Had a great rookie year. But they could use added depth, especially in the secondary.
And remember, me and Dettino went at it last year. I liked Michael Thomas a lot more than he did. I was right on Michael Thomas.
Thomas had a very productive year.
I'm wrong about a lot. I was right about Michael Thomas.
Thomas had more touchdowns than any other rookie wide receiver. Now, it also helps being in that offense and having Drew Brees.
A little bit. Still,
I think you got to give credit to the individual player.
Yeah, and a lot of guys picked ahead of him. I think four or five wide receivers went ahead of Michael Thomas, maybe even six, and he ended up being maybe the best of the group, to be honest with you, which just shows you it's not a matter of where you pick, it's a lot. It's a matter of
who you pick.
The right guy.
Yeah.
Picking the right guy.
You hit it right in the nose. People get caught up in you have to take this player at this spot. You know what? If you're set on that player and you have good feelings on that player, then take him where you think there's good value.
And it's about Michael Lombardi, who used to be with the Patriots, the Browns. He had an interesting article for The Ringer, Bill Simmons' website, right? And he basically said that the people that talk about guys, oh, he's a first rounder, he's a second rounder, we didn't even care about that. We didn't classify guys in rows and things like that with the Patriots. Instead, they labeled guys as day one starter, eventual starter, developmental guy, bench guy, non-NFL player.
So more in tiers.
Right.
Which
so
makes sense.
And they basically had guys listed in that way. So if they thought a guy was a starter, even though maybe a lot of teams had him as a second-round pick, like, no, this guy's a starter, they had no problem picking him in the first round because he's a day-one starter. You know what I mean? So they kind of – it shows you how different teams have different philosophies in terms of how they rank guys.
Yeah, just piggybacking off of your point, if you go back to last year, you had Corey Coleman, you had Will Fuller, you had Josh Doctson, you had Laquon Treadwell.
Four.
You had Sterling Shepard.
Five.
And then you had Michael Thomas.
And Shepard and Thomas was the best of that group, the two of them.
One and two in terms of touchdowns as rookie wideouts.
And probably catches,
some of
too,
those,
right?
They probably were up there catches. I don't remember the catch totals. I mean, Will Fuller unfortunately got hurt, but he was off to a blistering
Coleman
start. Coleman got hurt too. Doctson got hurt too.
And Boyd was okay.
Treadwell barely played.
No, that's
so,
what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I think
production standpoint, those two. But I'm not willing to go so far to say that over the course of a career,
of course not.
That these guys don't have a shot of living up to expectations.
And the first year, a lot of times, doesn't mean a whole lot either.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Well, because Doctson, I think he's got a great opportunity, by the way, with DeSean Jackson no longer in Washington, if he could stay healthy, of course.
Though he'll often now be fighting for playing time with Terrell Pryor
and
Torrey Smith and Crowder. So he's still part of a four-headed monster there. So,
Torrey Smith went to the Eagles, remember.
I'm sorry, not Torrey Smith.
Well, no, you were right. You named Crowder, Pryor, and Doctson.
I thought they brought in another guy. They didn't?
They may have another veteran
on
the roster.
You're right.
But
Torrey Smith is Eagles.
Yeah, Torrey Smith's on the Eagles.
You're right. So Doctson will have a chance to be the third guy.
Yeah,
so
he's going
to
battle
absolutely.
It out. You got the tight end.
Right.
You got Vernon Davis and Jordan Reed, of course. But from a receiving standpoint, he's in the top three.
Absolutely. All right, final call of the show, Freddie in New Jersey. We're already over, Freddie. You have to make this quick, pal. What's up?
Okay, hey, guys. How you doing? You guys know that I've been hounding for Njoku since day one.
Yep.
But safety's off the board at 23. And we go linebacker. I would take Cunningham over Davis just because his injuries scare me. I know he'd been nicked up and everything, but just the way the Giants like clean players and everything. What do you got to think about
that?
Well,
Davis has that ankle injury.
Yeah,
that's what
and that's the thing. I mean, look, I think Art's right. It's not like it's an Achilles. It's not like it's an ACL. It's not like it's concussions. It's not like it's a torn rotator cuff. An ankle sprain is an ankle sprain. You can get over ankle sprains, all right? So it's not a killer injury to me, but it is something that I think you red flag and you say, you know what? Do we think Davis is so much better than Cunningham that it's worth taking a little bit of an extra injury risk? And I think that's the calculation you have to make there. And in the first round, I would probably err on the side of caution myself. But I could see if some people really think Davis is that much better. It's only an ankle. You know,
yeah, you're right.
That okay. Maybe you want to go with Davis.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, finish up. I'm done, Freddie.
Okay. Real fast. Another thing is, say if, like, Dalvin Cook is slipping. I'm not a fan of taking a running back in the first round. But I'm curious to see where the Giants have him rated in the Njoku at the same time at the board at that point, because it would not shock me if they take Cook if he's there at 23, which I wouldn't take. But I just have a weird feeling that they might go running back with Cook.
Well, again, Cook's a lot of injury and off-the-field stuff too, so we don't know where that would move him up or down the Giants board, obviously. I think, like Reuben Foster, Lance, if you're looking at just – if you're starting a team from scratch – and there's no roster, and you have Dalvin Cook sitting there, and you have Njoku sitting there. Dalvin Cook's probably the better player if you're just looking at what you do on the field. But there's other stuff in the equation there you have to take into consideration.
Yeah, exactly.
Obviously.
Like I said, I would take Njoku over him all day, every day. But now, real fast, another thing is if Foster's there at 23 and Njoku's there, now that's where it gets tricky. But who knows, you know? So we'll see on Thursday night what happens.
Thanks, Freddie. Appreciate the
phone call.
Thanks,
guys.
It only gets tricky if they're very close in terms of the value based on the team's rankings. If
right.
Foster is so far ahead of Njoku,
it's not tricky.
And he drops to 23, I really don't think it's tricky. You then, if you have the philosophy of best value, you're looking at a guy who's essentially a top 10 pick.
Or are there,
Foster.
Are there enough red flags that have knocked Foster down the board?
Correct.
Who knows?
That have brought his value down.
You don't know
down.
Where the Giants have him ranked. So.
That mm-hmm. depends on the individual teams and where they you know, put players, and it's the same thing with a guy like Cook. And, I mean, I would side with the last caller's philosophy. This is just my personal opinion. I don't love running backs in the first round, and I know there's the Ezekiel Elliotts and so forth, but I think that you could get a better player that can make a more immediate impact on this team in 2017 than perhaps at the running back position.
I'm generally with you. I think certain teams that are ready for a great running back, I think they could really make a difference. I think if Oakland brought in a really good running back this year, I think to me that could turn their offense into a top three offense.
Because they lost Latavius Murray. And
Latavius
DeAndre
Murray
Washington.
Wasn't that good. They have a great offensive line. They have a quarterback.
They're in a position for a guy to come in and plug in and then
just like
take
the Cowboys were with Ezekiel
yeah,
Elliott last year.
Point.
So if you can find that team, and I think the Eagles to a certain extent are like that too. You have a young quarterback you want to help. You have some good offensive linemen in front of them. You add Alshon Jeffrey outside. You have some good tight ends that are weapons in the passing game. I think a really good running back could turn that Eagles
like
offense.
Like a Leonard Fournette or somebody.
Yeah, or a McCaffrey even. I think you can turn that Eagles offense into something that's really, really formidable. So I think you have to find the right team for the running backs, and if you do, it makes sense. But generally, I agree with you.
Yeah. No, I think that's a very fair philosophy and wouldn't be surprised if some of those teams that you mentioned wind up actually do taking a running back in round one.
Thanks for joining us, everybody. Tomorrow we're going to double up on the draft experts. We'll have Rob Rang, which Lance and I will record later on today, and then we'll have Matt Miller live tomorrow from Bleacher Report. Rob Rang, of course, from the Sports Exchange, CBS Sports. And just a reminder again, Friday night, a special Big Blue Kickoff Live, 7 p.m., DeTino and I, and then Saturday at noon, DeTino and I, another special Big Blue Kickoff Live, and then our special mock draft. Draft will be Thursday at noon. For Lance Menno, I'm John Schmoe. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you tomorrow. One more day closer to the NFL Draft. Have a good one, everybody.
Have a good one.